Yeah, your video went away. It's just a picture of your class, I guess.
Oh, that must be my default picture. Yeah, I took it down because you couldn't see it. I figured it'd be better for the bandwidth. But I can put it back up if you want to see it.
No, it's fine. It's cool. It's fine. I can hear you. You
All
can't
right.
see me. It's kind of weird. I'm staring at you. You can't
Yeah.
see me.
Yeah. It's like John Cena over there.
Yeah.
No, I mean, it would be easier
That
if
was
you
a
got.
terrible joke, by the way.
Well, we're warm enough.
Yeah.
None of this is gonna make it. So our list of topics, I emailed you earlier. I'll recap those for whoever's listening. We had agreed to talk about incels, has-beens, Michelle Wolf, Cobra Kai, and Infinity War. I would say we should close with Infinity War because spoilers, but what do you want to start with otherwise?
I guess let's get Michelle Wolf out of the way since that's kind of an older story now at this point.
Dude, but did you watch it?
I watched pieces of it. I didn't have like I didn't really get a chance to watch the whole thing. But the Trump so broke jokes were pretty fantastic.
The best thing, I watched the whole thing. I watched the whole thing. I first of all, just for I guess my interaction with this. I mostly think the White House Correspondents' Dinner is masturbatory. I think the only good one that was before this was Stephen Colbert when he did the same thing. And I think it's interesting that they're changing it now. Did you see, in response to Michelle Wolf's apparent vulgarity, they're going to change the format and have just like, make it the masturbatory fest it was always intended to be by not having anybody tell any jokes that might offend anyone in the room?
Yeah, I completely agree that it's masturbatory. Honestly, who cares? Like this whole thing, like people are like, so the right wing had their little rage fest, and liberals have to have their anti-rage fest, but nobody's gonna really give a shit that this is changing, right?
Yeah, probably not in the long term. I think it's awesome that it went out this way. I think it's interesting that a woman had to do it before a man got in trouble for it. But besides all that context, I want to point out that I have been an undercover, and I say undercover, maybe unnoticed, because this isn't a thing. It is now, but I was on board early. I'm a Michelle Wolf stan. I loved her on The Daily Show. She opened for Chris Rock when I saw Chris Rock, and she, well, she, I would say she had the better set because she had the shorter set, but her set was just wall-to-wall great one-liners. I have been on board with Michelle Wolf. I've been tracking her for a while. So when she was named to be the White House Correspondents' Dinner, I was like, maybe she'll be raw the way Colbert was that one time, or maybe she'll just play it safe because she's young. You and her career. Oh, she came out hot. She came out getting everybody. Everybody got some. I haven't seen such a complete owning of an entire room of people who aren't used to being humbled since Stephen Colbert did it like 10 years ago. It was a You should watch the whole thing. It's amazing.
Well, that's why everybody got mad. Like, she really gave it to the press pretty hard.
Oh, they got it real good. And I think that's what it really is. I think if she had stuck
Yeah.
to Trump, it would have been fine. But she came after them. She came after them hard. She had two great joke, not joke moments. One, she said, people really want me to make fun of Sean Hannity, but this show's about journalists.
Yes.
And then she said about the print media. She's like, I would make fun of print media, but it's illegal to attack endangered species. I thought those were both great. But it's just full of stuff like that. And yeah, but she comes after it hard. Oh, Fox News, she said, Fox News is here, so ladies, cover your drinks. And she said it like real straight face, like, I'm serious.
Well,
Yeah,
she
shit
just
like.
shouldn't have made that eyeliner joke.
Whatever, man. That joke wasn't even the best one. That joke was a throwaway.
Know.
But they needed something. They needed
They
something.
needed something to get to double down on. And it's more their commentary on the way Sarah Sanders looks than hers. It
Right.
was, yeah.
Right. No one mentioned her looks at all. No
No.
one, it never even came up, which tells you that they're anxious about her looks, right? Because they're used to having all these platinum blondes be their speakers, right? Kellyanne Conway. I forget the blonde lady that was George Bush's press secretary who ended up joining one of those Fox and Friends type shows.
Yeah, she's on the five, I think.
Ivanka Trump. Yeah, her, the one on the five.
Yeah.
Although I thought she was appreciably less terrible than her predecessor, who's that turtle-looking dude with the little glasses. I don't remember him either. Who cares?
Ari Fleischer?
Yeah.
Yeah.
That fucker. We didn't have to say his name. He didn't deserve So I will say two things, and I want to go back to something you just said, because I think it's a great segue into one of our big topics for today. First of all, I love stand-up comedy. You love stand-up comedy. I am considering where that performance is on my all-time list. It's a top 10 easily. It's that good. If you can divorce it from the fun context of, like, she's insulting these people that you probably don't respect right to their face, and they either have to be glum, poor sports, or they have to pretend they think it's funny. And that's part of the fun for me, is watching Jake Tapper pretend he liked that joke about him. Stuff like that. That's what I think is fun for me. But I think just on the quality of the one-liners and the ballsiness of the jokes and the Tomminess of it, for me, it's way up there already. I love it. It's already planning to rewatch. It's only 20 minutes, so it's very consumable. Second of all, you nailed it with something you said earlier with their little rage fest. Conservatives used to be the one that always bitched about people not being able to take a joke. What happened?
No, conservatives are the ones who complain all the time. They literally complain about everything. So they even their complaint about liberals is just them complaining.
Yeah, I guess so. You're right. But so much of that, like, when I think conservative, you're talking like conservative media, and that's totally true.
Media, yeah. I'm talking about the loud voice that is conservative Twitter.
Yeah. Well, Twitter is generally a very insecure place.
Like, yeah.
I don't think there's any Twitter kingdoms known for being, like, rational and laid back.
Very true.
But I guess conservative people, in my experience, are always the ones that are, like, pronounce that, you know, people need to take a joke, quit being so sensitive, everybody's politically correct, blah 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 blah. And they've just been, I mean a part of me wants to say they've always been touchy and that this has always been hypocritical, but on some level they had convinced me that they weren't as touchy as liberals, and they're fucking way touchier.
A certain kind of conservative person is I think you're more libertarian Matt and Trey Parker guys don't give a shit. I think sort of the moral high ground conservative type sort of latched onto that snowflake thing, but they've always been sort of fucking anything would trigger them.
Yeah, I guess I'm just disappointed that they didn't live up to it. Maybe this is just a class thing. Like, the people who can even get on those sorts of media are, you know, they're going to have some level of privilege. So maybe this is a class distinction, that maybe the more money you make, the touchier you get. Because I still want to believe that for all their infuriating politics, the one thing the white working class has always been able to do, at least in my romanticization of them and my interactions with them, has been able to take a joke. And so I'm hoping that at least that they somehow can admit that this was super fucking funny.
Yeah. But the humor they like is putting down other people.
Yeah, they should be all over this.
Yeah, but the problem with that is there's no other people in that. It's them. They don't like them getting made fun of. They like other people getting made fun of.
Man, that's so disappointing. That's so disappointing. You're probably right.
It's like, yeah.
Conservatives who might be listening, tell me that you don't mind being made fun of if other people are made fun of too, because everybody gets it in Michelle Wolf's. Like, people are cutting up the Trump part because, you know, that's what people want to talk about. But everybody gets them. Like, nobody walks away unscathed. She's unique. Now, definitely the people who get it worse are white women, which I don't think are being used to being targeted by another white woman. They definitely get it the worst.
Yeah.
But, you know, I guess it's your turn and it's one of your own, so relax.
So what happens if it's a dude who gives that? Like, it's Michael Che instead of her.
A black dude? That dude gets shot on the way to his car. A white dude? Nothing. Nothing happens.
Well, yeah, if it's Colin Jost, it's nothing. But oh, like Colin Michael Che.
No, if it's Colin Jost, we're talking about how nice Scarlett Johansson's dress was. Like, it's not. No, come on. Stephen Colbert was just as outlandish 10 years ago. It made a blip, but then people let it go. You know,
We didn't have Twitter then, though. Well, like, true. we didn't have sort of the press having the kind of voice they have now with Twitter. So you don't get media members, like, thoughts that freely all the time back then. Because I'm sure they were just as upset back then.
I want to believe that they weren't. I want to believe that somehow the quality of the conservative sense of humor was made of sterner stuff back then. But you're probably right.
During the Dick Cheney era?
I mean, that dude shot someone in the face. Like, we were all, everybody was making fun of it. Like, nobody was, there wasn't press conferences about how we shouldn't make fun of that.
Yeah.
Unless there were, and I just was laughing too hard to hear it, which is also possibly true.
I'm sure no one made jokes to his face, you know, because he might shoot you.
It's weird that somehow I have fallen into the trap of Bush nostalgia. I thought for sure I would be, I would not, but.
No, those people were monsters. They led us into a war we were still in.
Oh, no, I know. But for some reason, I feel like we could all joke about it at least.
Yeah.
Or maybe I was just joking about it and nobody else was.
No, it's the Bush nostalgia tour. It's that time. Trump's awful, so we'll cling to other monsters.
Oh, the worst president's power ranking is another episode.
Oh yeah, that's a deep dive.
That's July 4th.
Okay.
July 4th. If you're listening, yeah. July 4th, worst presidents in American history power rankings.
Oh, Calvin Coolidge, I can't wait. Sean Randall's sunset ship. When the moon is round and cool, gotta bust that box, gotta cut that first leg. Keep the dress and the stolen car. But I remember when we got too far. Have you looked up anything about the community? Like how much do you know about it?
Quite a bit now since I got obsessed with it. So I want you to tell what it is, because I did not know about this until a few days ago. And it's becoming an increasing, well, I won't say obsession, but like obsessed the way you might obsess with looking at a car accident.
That's how I was after Elliot Rodger. So for anybody who doesn't know, incels are people who consider themselves involuntary celibate, which really is just a bunch of dudes who don't get laid.
Right, it's actually exclusively men, because I have the rules of their forum on my laptop here, and females are banned on site, no exceptions, which feels like contrary to their purposes, but all right, I'm not going to tell them how to do their stupid business.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And Elliot Rodger, if you remember, went and killed his mission was to kill sorority girls, and when they didn't answer the door, he turned around and killed the first two girls he saw walking by him. But this community are just a bunch of – it's really like you. If you were 17 years old and not getting laid, you know this mindset. And when I got super, super absorbed into it after the Elliot Rodger thing, just reading their forum posts.
Elliot Rodgers, that was 2014?
Yeah, that was 4 years ago.
Yeah, because he's the – like he wrote the thing that's like the manifesto or whatever?
Yes. Yeah, he's St. Rodger in the community. The community looks up to him. Like, yeah, he's called St. Rodger. The guy in Toronto who ran over people, also an incel, wrote posts saying he honor you in honor of St. Rodger.
All right, let's just be clear here about incels, because I want to get some more terminology out there. They also have this, I guess, mythology about them. Mythology may not be it. Slang? I don't know. About Chads and Stacys. Stacys are beautiful women. Chads are beautiful men. And they can't get a Stacy because Stacy.
Chad is also a term used by alt-right guys.
Yeah, that's their preferred look. We're going to get to that part of it.
Yeah.
Trust me, we're building up to that. Because I'm going to be honest, I tried to engage with this idea with, obviously not with Elliot Rodger or the guy in Toronto, Masai, I don't know how to say it. The copycat guy with the truck who is an incel. But I came to their website to sort of try to engage with some level of, I guess empathy, if I'm being honest, just to see, all right, let's, I'm going to assume those two are extreme versions of something else. It's just as a sort of starting point. And we'll get to what I saw on their website. But they feel that they are being discriminated against sexually because women won't give them any play. And again, women to them is defined as Stacys, who are beautiful women. So it tells you already about who they're being rejected by and how that's feeling into it. That because they're being discriminated against and not being allowed to pass on their genes, extremist versions of this means they are going to start killing people, because if you're not letting me pass my genes on, you're basically killing me. But all of this is just like, I'm horny and the pretty girls don't like me, so I'm turning it into a victim complex. Right?
That's it in a nutshell.
Right. So based on their website, multiple versions of this mentality, people who are celibate without choice, they would like to get laid, but they can't because Stacys aren't interested in them. So there's a sort of something of a diversity of at least relationship to this issue as outlined on their website, but we can get to that. So you've been itching to talk about this, so give me your takes.
Yes. So really, this is, if you are an American person and you cannot understand the mindset that leads someone in the Middle East to join Al-Qaeda, I would say go to an incel forum. I think when you're reading this, the mindset of these guys and the indoctrination that's happening on these websites are exactly what create these kind of events. Because even the guy in Florida has a slight connection to the incel community. Apparently he was posting on their forums as well and like dabbled in alt-right things. Like this is something we should be paying more attention to, because I think this is where we're going to start seeing, like, we're having an increase in white supremacist crime. I think incel crime is the next thing we're really going to have to be worried about, which is tied into the greater scheme of, you know, misogynistic crime, which is probably the biggest issue we don't talk about.
Oh, man, yeah. First of all, you nailed it with we don't talk about this. One of the things I've been thinking about is how seriously do I need to take this? Because the first thing I thought of was, like, we've all remember that dude in high school or college. I've known multiple versions of this guy who just think that if he performs the right kind of masculinity, women sort of owe it to him to like him.
Yes.
But instead, they like these trash guys, you know? And it shows, and that becomes a sort of judgment about the character of women generally, that they don't appreciate a good man when they see one.
Good guy complex.
Ugh, I hate it. It's the worst. Yeah. It's like, you know, people like to throw around toxic masculinity, and I'm one of those people who thinks, like, we should hold those words in reserve for when we really need them, right? Especially things like sexism, racism, you know, not to get sidetracked. Yeah. I am one of the people who thinks we should be using those words more specifically, I think.
Mm-hmm.
But that one super applies here, because that is the sort of greatest version of entitlement. And the next thing I thought, this is why I came to their website, because I didn't want to have this sort of like recency bias or prejudicial bias, is that both these guys are also white guys, so it's easy for me to think like, oh, well, that's why we don't hear about this, because they're white dudes, and white dudes don't rat on other white dudes. You know, unless they're going to get laid, then they will do it. Because they're still dudes. But so I decided to like, then I thought like, oh, this has got to be, and I know there's connections to the alt-right, so I thought like, oh my God,
These two dudes are minorities.
Elliot Rodgers?
Elliot Rodgers, Asian.
Really?
Yeah.
Oh, my bad. There you go. That's what I get for assuming.
Yeah. No, that's like, that's another interesting aspect about this. They were both minorities.
I don't think, the other guy was?
Elliot Rodgers, he's like half Asian, I believe.
Not him, the guy in Toronto.
You're going to have to edit out this Googling.
Yeah.
I thought he was a minority as well.
Alec Benassin. I'm probably saying that right. I don't know. I don't see anything about his ethnicity. His picture is, it's just a white dude. He could be like
Okay.
That name sounds Eastern European, which is just a different kind of white dude.
Yeah. I could be wrong.
But I didn't know that about Elliot Rodgers. Well, I'm actually glad you said that, because that makes me ties into what I'm saying, is I had this assumption that oh, this is a white thing, right? But I thought immediately like, nah, that's not fair. I shouldn't assume. So let's go to the website. So I will tell you a few things I discovered on the website, and I'm just mostly looking at their rules and terminology and FAQ. And I'm not endorsing this by any means, but I thought some things I thought were interesting. Like incels, there's multiple types. You know, there's a virgin one called True Cell, which I just think that's cute. Mental Cell, which is people who become incels because of mental illness or some kind of crippling insecurity, which I actually thought like, hey, there's an actual mental health discussion here. That's something that's fights back against some of the masculine stereotypes that at least you and me came up with, you know, boys don't cry. So I thought, I was like, whoa, okay. Then there's Vol Cells, who are voluntary cells, I suppose, who are just choose to be abstinent. So I think immediately, oh, maybe there's some Christians in here involved. I don't know, because that's the only people I can think of that are voluntarily abstinent, at least in some like big enough way that we have that at least I had an assumption for that. They got all these like, you know, 4chan-y words, black-pilled, blue-pilled. I guess blue-pilled is a reference to The Matrix. But are there things not to do? I thought like, aha, and I'm trying to fight it, but it feels like an aha. You can't troll. There's anti-trolling. There's actually a lot of anti-bullying language that I also find interesting. sort of anthropologically. But here's the one rule for trolling. Posting bait, purposely triggering threads to create reactions is not allowed. So they've embraced the language of triggering and the language of anti-bullying and the language of disability. On what level this is just appropriation and what level is genuine, it's probably a bit of both. I'm going to try to give them some credit. But here's where I thought the game was had. Under trolling, they only have one example of what trolling is. And that trolling is race bait. Which, while it's interesting that you said that there are, people of color in this community, and why wouldn't there be? There's definitely, you know, fat, ugly brown dudes, right? But, which probably is not the way I should describe them, but definitely people who see themselves as such, right? Having been one myself, you know, I get it. But does not include race baiting. There's the sort of like the entitlement of it, right? Because it's not permitting a discussion of race. It's like, it's almost like weirdly like third wave feminism where women of color don't get their voices heard specifically in the context of being a woman of color. So this is community that isn't, I don't know if it's fair to say primarily white, but they clearly won by entitled white kids.
Yeah. But have you seen how it actually started? It was started by a woman.
Really?
Yeah. The term incel was created by a woman dealing with her loneliness, and then men co-opted it.
Huh.
Yeah.
You know, another thing about this sort of entitlement too, the same thing with the sort of victim complexes, I forget what they call themselves. Let's call them the Elliots. No, let's not say that guy's name. He was a killer. Fuck him.
Yeah, fuck that guy.
The incels is that the whole idea of Chads versus Stacys, that all the beautiful women just want these beautiful guys and they don't see them for what they're worth. There's one thing about that type that has been true in all my lifetime is they don't see the irony of their own position because they're not interested in average looking women. They need a beautiful woman to validate them. Like there are,
yeah, they feel they deserve that beautiful woman.
Right, there are plenty of average ass people like you that also need love and need affirmation, but you're not interested in them because that doesn't validate your ego, right? Now, blended into this, there are probably some people that would be like, "Hey, I would, I'll take a non attractive woman, like I don't care," but just the language of it just reeks of like, no, I deserve a beautiful woman, I deserve a model because I earned it, right? My genes are special and they deserve to be mixed with other awesome genes. And of course they only see awesome genes as beauty.
Yeah. And a lot of it, so going back to like the good guy, the quote unquote good guy thing, it's a lot of so when I went through a bad breakup 2 years ago and I was feeling really down. So I was reading nothing but like Dr. Nerd Love and like advice columns. And I started to notice a theme with the good guy. It's pretty much, did you ask her out? There's no like friend letter or like friend zone or anything like that. Really, all of their problems were boiled down to, hey man, you like that girl. Did you ask her out? And the answer 9 times out of 10 was no. And they still felt like they were dessert, like they owed something, like the girl owed them something, even though they had never, you know, admitted how they felt about said girl.
Well, two things about that. I'm trying to be positive, negative as much as I can, even though I really have, very little respect for what this represents. And I'm going to assume that the extreme violent ones don't represent a norm, but maybe they do. I don't know, right? It's not like men don't have a history of being violent to women, particularly men that feel slighted. But what you just said, the insecurity thing, you know, there's something to that. Like, it's hard to, like, if you're genuinely intimidated by a beautiful woman, you know, I have sympathy for that. But then to turn that into, basically, she sucks for just not having noticed it and therefore liberating me from having to, you know, step up, that she just can't tell without me having to do anything.
Yeah, that's when it becomes a problem. Like, you're projecting that onto them when it's not their fault.
Yeah,
you know?
They don't, she doesn't owe you shit, dude. Like, she's her own person. She's her own, hey, tough shit. Even though I agree with you, like, yeah, you clean up well, your house is clean, you make your payments on time, you're not offensive looking. Yeah, sure, you deserve to have someone love you. But if the person you chose just doesn't, well, fucking tough shit. That sucks. It hurts for all of us when someone you think would be great for you or you would be great for them doesn't feel the same way. But they don't fucking owe you that. That's just fucking life, bro. Like,
you know? Exactly.
You know, there's a little part of me that's like, maybe we should just like have a conversation about sex work and legalize sex work in a way that has it some respect, and they can just help each other out. Because, you know, there's so much violence against sex workers, and if we're going to have a sex positive society, at some point we got to be willing people to, you know, do that. And I'm not saying we should legalize prostitution just to appease incels, but something in my head, there's something makes me think that those two things are somehow related in some level. Like these sort of sex negativity culture that we have, generally, I think that's, we're still a sex negative culture, and I think these things are all tied together. But until then, dude, tough shit, man. That's what jerking off is for. Like, I don't know what to tell you. Like, nobody owes you shit. I'm sorry that your mom made you believe you were a prince, but you know, turns out you were might be a frog. So just date a toad and make each other happy. That's what I.
No, man, toads are beautiful too.
Yeah, actually, and also yes, like actually yes. And I'm like, I don't know if you see my picture. I'm not a Chad. You know, I'm a, I don't know, what's a name that sounds, I don't know, you know, passingly charming and, a you know, physically amorphous. I don't know, Bob? Like, there, I'm a Bob. Like, I'm not a fucking Chad. I'm telling you, as a fellow once was an incel, get the fuck over yourself, you know, work on yourself as an interior person. Have an inner life, because nobody owes you shit other than you. Nobody is required to love you, not even your parents. And every time someone does, it's a gift, so be gracious. And no, none of people do, well, maybe work on yourself. I don't know, man. I don't know what to say.
Yeah, but it's weird because now we've when people feel insecure, we just create a community of people with those same insecurities, which might not be the best, most natural or healthy thing for people with that particular insecurity.
I mean, there's something to be said for support networks, but yeah, if it's built around a narrative of exclusion that is kind of imagined, yeah, maybe not the best.
And young boys are like the most easy to do, you know, to convince to do something.
But I am glad that frustratedly horny 17-year-old me didn't know about incels, man, because I don't know how I would have fucking turned out. That's unfair. There's probably some kind of happening, right?
Being in the forum, I'm like, oh, I could see myself going down this rabbit hole at one point in my life, like, for sure.
Yeah. It must be so mutually reinforcing, right? It's
like it's right. Like, I'm not the problem here. Like, fuck, everybody wants to hear that. I'll turn you around in time. When the moon is round and full, gonna teach you tricks that will blow your mind, real mind. Every doll I recognize, you're a hideous thing inside. Ever there when the lucky comes, it's you.
I'm going to segue into the conversation and by quoting someone who I won't name because I'm trying to not name
people
who are a-holes. But there was a stand-up comedian who said that it's not, I'm paraphrasing here, it's not up to you to decide whether or not you're an asshole. That's the rest of us jobs. If we all agree that you're an asshole, you're a fucking asshole. So relax and work on yourself because nobody likes you. It might be you. Like, it really might be you. You should really consider that.
Yeah.
But, you know, dudes are never never taught that.
No. Right?
Women are taught that all the time.
Well, because women have to live in fear of men their whole lives.
Which gets us to our next topic. Because you said something hilarious on Twitter about a not hilarious topic. And you said it's a bad week for has-beens.
Yeah, it was.
And particularly in reference to Chuck D, who was defending Bill Cosby.
Well, he wasn't defending him. He just called his current conviction a modern-day lynching.
Jeez, a public lynching.
Public lynching. He said public lynching.
I have actually his series of tweets pulled up.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's Chuck D. And sometimes I'm like, old man using Twitter. Sometimes when I read these. We're living in a wild, bizarre time. Character assassination, very real. Dr. Cosby and Confederate flag down the same week. Status is currently currency to masses. And which I don't know what he's going for by comparing Bill Cosby to Confederate flag. But let's just keep reading and not try to understand this. They're taking his name and statues down, but is every situation giving his money back to him since it's dirty money? Question, do some of y'all stop listening to Marvin Gaye records because of drug addiction, attempted murder, wife abuse, pedophilia? No way I'm defending Cosby, but this wiping history out with a swoop is akin to Nazi book burning. Context is everything. Phil Spector still plays. This is, keep going. I wasn't defending anything, but I ain't naive neither, nor was I a kid in the 80s totally swept by a TV show. I already watched Cosby in the 60s, and that was the end of it. And then, of course, he said on whatever show that this was a modern-day lynching. All right, what's your takes?
I mean, every old famous black guy is defending Cosby because, I mean, if you, how can I put this? All right. Think of an adult man who's not your father, who you love, who you fucking love, who was there for you the most in your life. That's Bill Cosby for every famous man over 40 years old. There's two people who are important to you, Bill Cosby and Richard Pryor. Especially if you're a black comedian. Like, they are the two most important men in your whole career when you're in the 80s. And they're not ready to say that dad raped a bunch of chicks. Or they don't give a shit because they, you know, they're pieces of shit too. But it's kind of like Damon Wayans. Like, he's actually the one I wrote the tweet about. Because
that's
said,
right.
Yeah, he said the women were unrapeable.
Oh, fuck. This, like,
yeah.
Oh man, it makes you want to go back to talking about incels.
But
like, God.
But look at R. Kelly. Like, Scottie Pippen. Like, Scottie Pippen was in the video. Like, nobody's. All these old dudes aren't ready to fucking kick them to the curb. And I think it's a lot of these dudes have dealt with Hollywood racism for decades. And there were few black people who were able to achieve what Bill Cosby was able to achieve when he did it. And they're really not ready to let go of that icon in their brain. And two, old dudes just don't believe chicks because they don't.
Oh.
Because fucking shit, man, we're a terrible society.
Oh, man. Oh, there's so much there to respond to.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Let me think. So first of all, when he said the lynching thing, my immediate thought was like, 15 years ago, this would have been a reference to slavery. And then I thought, progress? like our overblown celebrity oppression metaphor going to be mass incarceration in 20 years? Like, is that, I don't know. This is
that, well, that has to end first, or theoretically.
Oof. Yeah. This is gonna bring back memories of that 420 episode we did.
Yeah.
So secondly, about that mentor status that Cosby has, I have some sympathy for that. And when I say that, let me make it clear, you got to cut this fucker loose. He's an ass. He's a piece of shit.
Yeah.
He's going to probably die in jail, and that's probably what he deserves. Like, you guys need to cut your losses. Even though I respect the loyalty of that, there's a real like urban, like under no matter what, never snitch, never give him up to the cops, never bail, that I grew up with a lot of that and I respect. But you got to know when to cut your losses. That guy is just going to drag you all down because he's a cancer. But I respect that emotion only because one of my heroes has recently had Me Too rumblings, and I'm going to pause to talk about it at length for a future episode because I'm still thinking it through, and also it's been pretty smaller in scale than certainly R. Kelly and Bill Cosby, and that's the writer Juno Diaz, who's a Pulitzer Prize-winning Dominican author, who's important to me both personally and professionally for the similar reasons as you said about black artists over 40. For Latino men who either write or study writing in their 30s, that's Juno Diaz, and his stuff has been mostly like "kiss me without my consent" type stuff, which is reprehensible and disgusting, but not the level of felonious criminality that R. Kelly and Bill Cosby have achieved. But it hurt me. Like, no, like, I need this guy. I don't have, there's no, he's the Latino writer. So I get it. But at the same time, like, you know, after a certain point, that guy doesn't deserve that anymore.
Yeah. I think it's tough to make heroes of people we could never truly know. And in celebrity culture, like, it's hard not to make heroes out of these people, especially when you consume the art. But yeah, man, it's really only a matter of time before your hero fails you. Like,
bro, I tell my students all the time, don't have heroes. They will only disappoint you.
Yeah.
And I realized that on some level, I had turned Junot Diaz into a hero. Not deliberately, because I've always been critical of him. I never thought he could write good women, for example.
No.
But he was still important to me because of what he sort of represented, like our first breakthrough. And it turns out he's probably a turd.
Yeah. Sorry, man.
Yeah, no, I get it. But at the same time, it's, you know, sooner or later, we'll find the line. And yeah. Usually women will tell us, because there you go. We don't listen to women, right? Like, Lifetime is now making an R. Kelly documentary after Vince Staples said that. It happened again. Like, yeah. It took a dude to say it.
Yeah.
That's crazy, man. We got to start listening to them.
Yeah.
I mean, as you said, like, we don't, like you say, you nailed it. There's an older generation that just doesn't listen. Oh. And I think that the ranks of us that do have improved, but that's still probably the majority, well, right?
And well, here's another thing that's scary about Cosby for me that I think about is, so I heard a comedian say that they knew that he did it, and like the reason he did it was because if they were drugged, there wouldn't be any story because he was famous. Like that was his rationale. And I'm curious how many guys he taught that to who we haven't heard about yet.
Oh, man, come on. Oh,
like,
oh man.
Yeah, I mean,
I hope just R. Kelly, I guess. So we already know who it is.
But in these circles, these Hollywood 60 parties, these Hollywood 70s, 80s parties, like you see, like Bryan Singer and Kevin Spacey, like their sort of thing was coached like together. Like, I wouldn't be surprised if there's dudes caping for Cosby who were doing this shit with him.
That's what I thought too, man. That some of these guys, they did it too. They were involved in that scene, so they're protecting themselves by protecting Cosby. Man, I don't know.
Yeah.
But probably.
Yeah.
Those dudes, I was about to say those dudes need to shut the fuck up so they don't get caught. But then I thought, no, keep talking. Let's catch you too,
motherfucker. No, I want every black dude who stands for Cosby to say it, because I need to know not to fuck with you.
Right? Yeah. I guess with R. Kelly, nobody's really had much to say about him lately. But I'll say this, to go circle back a little bit to Chuck D and what he said. I was just like, when he said that, my opinion reaction is probably everyone's reaction. Like, motherfucker, that guy had a lawyer and a trial. I don't remember that in any fucking lynching. Like Chuck D, you're smarter than that. Yeah. Like, and then I thought, where the hell is Harvey Weinstein's trial?
There will be none. There might be charges filed in New York. I seriously doubt it. But that's the closest I've heard.
There's definitely not going to be one. That dude's way too rich and way too white. And that's my point.
Yeah. One of his accusers has been arrested. Rose McGowan got arrested.
Yeah. I'm like, what the fuck? Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
This fucking country.
Yeah.
Man.
Yeah. Want to move on?
Let's move. Yeah, man. Let's fucking move on.
Yeah.
I mean, I guess, like, obviously this is a continuing conversation.
Yeah.
We got it, you know.
It's just who's next. It's who's next, and please don't let it be Will Smith.
Oh, no. We should have stopped talking about this. Why did you even put that thought in my head?
I'm not ready to lose Will Smith.
I can't lose Will Smith. I love his dopey mainstream, everybody, all the white people love him ass. Yeah. I love him too.
We almost lost him. Like, we almost lost him, and now he's rallied back. Like, he's got this second surge coming. Like, can't lose Will Smith.
God, if you are a God and you give a shit about us, please watch Will Smith over for us. Everybody likes him.
Yeah.
Everybody likes him. Nobody doesn't like Will Smith.
You got afraid of Beyonce, man.
Queen Bey, bless our Prince Will Smith, and please make him the fresh president. That would be amazing. What did you vote for Will Smith?
Twice.
And The Rock?
I would illegally vote for Will Smith.
Oh, man. All right, we're back. Okay, so one of the things we wanted to talk about was Cobra Kai. I have a confession to make, and then I'm just going to tell you what it is, and then I want to hear why this is so exciting for you. I didn't know what Cobra Kai was. I said, Cobra Kai, what's that? And you sent me back the trailer for a movie, which I recognize is a sequel of sorts to Karate Kid. I have never seen the Karate Kid. Because I've not seen most 80s movies because I didn't speak English till later in life. And then when I did, I mostly hung out with other people with similar experiences. And stuff like that is usually passed along from like older cousin to younger cousin or dad to son or, you know, mom to kids. So I've never seen Karate Kid. When I saw the crane kick in the trailer, I was like, oh, that, I've seen that. So must have caught it on TV somewhere. But I don't know what the Karate Kid really is other than wax on, wax off, because that's a cliche. So that is my confession. So you are now in charge of telling us why we should be excited about Cobra Kai.
Well, so I've watched all of it, but since you haven't seen it, or since you've never seen the Karate Kid, like you would get no enjoyment from it.
But I bet, I don't know if that's true, but I bet I can guess the narrative from the few scenes I've seen on TV, and also from that trailer. I take it Cobra Kai was like the bad school, and
they were the bullies. Yeah, they were the prototype of 80s bullies.
Okay, all right.
Yeah,
and then Daniel were the prototype. Was the good kid, and I know this because he was wearing white and the other dude was wearing black.
Yeah,
and then I also noticed that it seems like Daniel became kind of a D-bag in the future.
Yes.
So are they making the villain the good guy?
Yes. The lead is the villain from the 80s movie.
That's pretty cool.
Daniel is also in it.
Yeah.
Like he's they're both the lead, but the narrative goes through Johnny, who was the bully. His life has fallen apart. Daniel's life has only gotten better.
And that fight was high stakes, huh?
Yeah. Yeah. It's that fight, that regional fight at a high school karate tournament was the most important moment in each of their lives.
Nothing so important ever happened in that gym ever. That's crazy.
It's funny. It's funny that the stakes are so quote unquote high for something so trivial. And it's funny to bring, because they also make jokes like in the show, like he's opening a new karate dojo, he's bringing it back. Just how that's not really a thing anymore, karate dojos. And the story focuses on the kids that he's training. And you have a Hispanic kid who's getting bullied. He's the new Daniel son. But he's now being trained by Johnny, who was Daniel's bully. And then there's a parallel story going on where Daniel gets somebody to train who's connected to Johnny. And then it's about their sort of fight, like them coming, like their conflict.
So did these two have a relationship in high school? Because
Daniel stole his girlfriend.
Whoa.
You watch the Karate Kid. When you're a kid, you identify with Daniel. Someone made a great YouTube video.
Daniel's definitely an incel.
Yeah. No, Daniel got tons of tons of girls in Karate Kid. He had a new girlfriend every movie.
What?
He's like
And we're cheering, and that's the kid we're cheering for? The good looking one?
Oh yeah. Oh no, it's hilarious. You should watch The Karate Kid. He learns karate from this Japanese man in karate in about 3 months. There's a great scene in the movie where Miyagi's trying to catch a fly with his chopsticks. Uh-huh. And he talks about how it's like a meditation thing. He's been trying to do this all of his life. He's never been able to achieve it. Daniel does it that scene.
Whoa. Chosen One shit. So
Chosen One shit. It's really just insulting 80s movie bullshit. Like, oh, this kid really did this like immediately? This 50-year-old Japanese man's been trying to do this his entire life? And
that Japanese dude probably wasn't American.
He was interned. Mr. Miyagi is one of the greatest movie characters of all time. He is a badass. He was interned, and then he fought in the Korean conflict. He's a war hero.
What?
Yeah, Mr. Miyagi's a great character.
I always thought he was just like a racist character, Mickey Rooney or some shit.
No, he is definitely Pat Morita got an Oscar nomination for that role. Mr. Miyagi's a great character.
Did Gone with the Wind, though. Let's remember that.
Yeah, that's, yeah. But, no. Pat Morita's great in that movie.
And Crash.
Crash won.
Yeah, Crash won. So did Gone with the Wind. I'm taking Mr. Miyagi didn't win, so maybe he's not terrible.
No, he did. He did. It wasn't racist.
I didn't know any of that. Like, I always thought he was just like this Mickey Rooney guy who was just saying Zen things, and this white kid, you know, who was probably the loser in high school. But from what I'm hearing, he's like the chosen one and gets the girls all the time. So, so my choices for who I cheer for in that movie are the condescending white kid with all the girls, or the evil kid?
Yes.
Well, I mean, I would definitely have chosen the evil kid, probably.
Well, a lot of people... Well,
based on what I'm hearing.
It's a joke in certain things that the villain of the Karate Kid is actually the real Karate Kid, and Daniel just came along and ruined everything. And so this TV show sort of picks up that thread. And that's the focus of the TV show, is how Daniel came in and just kind of fucked everything up for Johnny.
So let me be clear. Everything I know about Daniel's character comes from the trailer, basically. Yeah. I recognized that crane kick. I'd seen that before. And then this trailer is all I know about him. But based on what I know, he became pretty kind of, you know, he's a car dealership guy. So he's, I guess, marked as sleazy. And this, you know, white dude who lost apparently the highest stakes high school kicking match of all time.
The All Valley Tournament.
Well, he's apparently, you know, been in dire straits for 34 years or whatever it's been, it said in the trailer. Yeah. And he's going to turn his life around by helping a poor Latino kid. And that fucking makes Daniel pissed. Like, all I gathered from that is that he does not want the Cobra Kai guy. What's his name?
Oh, Johnny.
Johnny? He does not...
Yeah.
Daniel does not want Johnny to turn his life around. That's no, really...
Daniel
really
has devoted his life to destroying Cobra Kai forever.
Why?
Because they bullied him in high school.
So when you say bullied, like, what did they do?
They pushed him down a hill on his bicycle. He hurt himself. I mean, you have to watch The Karate Kid.
All right. Well, I mean, we'll come back to this. Yeah. The internment thing alone makes me want to watch it just because, like, what? Somebody mentioned that in a movie? Like, I just, you know. Yeah. So I will give it a chance, but it sounds very 80s.
It's very 80s. The show itself is very 80s.
There's a show?
The TV show, the Cobra Kai is a television show.
And this is a trailer for the show?
The TV show. The TV show. It's a TV show.
Oh, I thought it was a movie.
No, it's 10 episodes. It got me to sign up for YouTube Red for the free trial month. yeah, but they're really...
You really like this movie.
Yeah, The Karate Kid, that was one of my fucking five favorite movies when I was growing up. Like, I was too young to see the first one in theaters, but I saw the next two in theaters. I even saw the next Karate Kid. Like, fucking loved The Karate Kid.
That's the one with the Karate Kid was a girl.
Yeah, Hilary Swank.
Oh, is that for real? Hilary Swank?
Yeah, it's Hilary Swank.
Oh, you think it's secretly a prequel to that boxer movie?
No, I wish.
Million Dollar Baby?
Yeah.
I'm going to go ahead and assume that it is.
I've never seen Million Dollar Baby.
I've never seen the next Karate Kid, so neither one of us can tell the other one they're wrong, right?
Okay, I'm good with that. We're right. I mean, yes.
And then there was one with Jackie Chan in it.
That's a remake with Jaden Smith. I've also seen that movie.
I liked that one, but I saw it because it was Jackie Chan. And I assumed going in that it was, because I saw it with somebody who was a fan of it, I guess your version. And I said, like, is that what the original was like? This seems like a pretty, like, interesting narrative to be told in the 80s. Like, oh, no, the 80s about totally something different. And I was like, oh, okay, so it's just the idea, I guess.
Yeah, the tone's different. Very different.
Yeah, that movie was pretty serious.
Yeah. I mean, the original Karate Kid's a serious movie. The very first one, they get sillier, like, as each movie goes on, especially the third one. The third one is ridiculous. But the first movie is a pretty serious movie.
So I'm supposed to take that crane kick seriously then?
Yeah.
All right. Well, you know, I'll do my best. I'll watch it. I'll watch it. I will. Well, no. Next time, I'll give you my reaction for next time. Alright, so to close, let's talk about Infinity War.
Alright.
All right, so I think you saw my take on Twitter. I really liked it.
You loved it, yeah.
But I'm seeing it again tomorrow, actually, with my class. But you start us off. What did you think?
I liked it. I was at no point in the theater completely blown away. My biggest gripe with Marvel movies is that they're pretty much, there's a lot of painted by numbers. They're kind of the same thing. They don't really stick out. I think my biggest problem with this movie is I never felt like it tried to achieve great filmmaking the way Black Panther did, or even like it never tried to be more than what it was, I guess, if that makes any sense. I just never felt, I never felt blown away by it. Like, even when motherfuckers started dying at the end, like, I'm like, yeah, like, of course this is what was going to happen. Like, just on, based on what I know about the source material, what I know about what they were trying to achieve with the movie, there was never a moment where I was surprised.
I think you're right about these sort of, we're trying to achieve anything. They sort of played it safe. Part of that's probably because no one's tried anything like this before.
Yeah.
And Marvel will stick to the formula when in doubt. And this one does, with, I would say, some notable exceptions, but it definitely doesn't completely, it doesn't expand on their repertoire at all, to be sure.
No.
I think that the couple little touches, though, I do think were sort of very cool. Gamora dying was very surprising, because if you know the original comics, she plays a critical role in how they get the glove back.
Mm-hmm.
I thought Thanos was awesome. Like I love the flip they did. They made him the protagonist. The Avengers are kind of the villains, right? At least from his perspective, because he becomes our focalizer, right? He's the consciousness the movie's most mm-hmm. interested in. And I think in that sense, they sold me on him seeing himself as a hero and seeing his sacrifices as sacrifices and actually feeling pain for them. A lot of that is Josh Brolin selling it.
Yeah, because they don't do really a lot to establish that.
They depend a lot on Brolin giving an emotional performance, and I thought it worked. Like, I thought Brolin and was fantastic. And Zoe,
like, they rely on her a lot. Like, she really hates Thanos.
Right.
As someone who knows Thanos.
Right.
I would have liked, I just would have liked to have seen more of their relationship established. Like, hell, like, open on a scene of them rather than how you open with Thor, you know, like, I just kind of wish that would have been the thread we stuck with a little bit more from the beginning than when we did. Like, I think it was probably 20 minutes too long.
I don't know about the 20 minutes too long. I didn't have any problem with the length, other than I don't think we needed to see so much building the hammer. We probably could use 5 minutes less than that.
Well, I don't think we needed any of that. I think Thor popping up with a new hammer would have been enough, and people would be like, oh, cool, you got a new hammer.
There's a little bit of Guardians problem where they think their funny joke is funnier than it is, and Peter Dinklage playing a giant dwarf is funny, but we don't need to see it for 20 minutes, and this isn't really slowing anything. It's kind of slowing down the narrative.
No. And you didn't really give him anything interesting to do. Like, that's not a meaty performance for Dinklage to do. It's just like, oh, my hands are frozen. Like, you know, like, it's, that whole scene didn't work. And the whole Thor holding the thing to open for the sunlight, like, none of that played for me.
I'll say I generally agree. I would say two things. I don't think you excise that scene, because you do get two good things out of it. One is Groot giving his arm for the handle.
Yeah.
That was a really cool moment.
That's true.
And also, we learned that the Stormbringer can open the Rainbow Bridge.
Yeah.
And his fucking entrance is amazing. That was my favorite moment. Like, I'll admit, there was more than once where I, like, cheered and clapped. But I was really on board. I realized when I was watching it that I had guarded my expectations so much, mm-hmm. lowered them so much. I'd be kind of pessimistic about it. And that's not me. I usually try to give movies a chance. So I really told myself, like, we're going to commit to giving this a chance. I'm not going to watch it with my arms crossed. I'm going to assume I'm going to like it. And that probably helped me like it, if I'm being honest. Yeah. So there was multiple moments where I cheered. And his arrival in Wakanda through the Rainbow Bridge was definitely one of them.
That's one of the better moments in the movie.
And that we don't get that without the axe scene. So you've got to be... But you could probably cut half of it. Easily cut half of it. In terms of Thanos, I liked the opening, actually, with Thor 3, only because it's connective tissue to the other movies, but also mm-hmm. it really established a threat. He just whooped Hulk's ass, and Hulk is now afraid. Like, that's a cool place to take the Hulk. Hulk being afraid of someone, I've never seen that before. I'm a little bit like, Hulk be afraid of something, but I'm giving it a chance. I want to hear it out, because that's new ground, to be sure. So I was cool with that, especially because they killed Loki in a way that was like a genuine death. Like, it wasn't like thrown out an airlock, who knows if he died. Like, we watched him die. Like, that was pretty brutal. We don't get stuff like that from Marvel. So I like that opening scene. But I do think, in terms of Thanos' narrative with Gamora, there's a real missed opportunity, and that's when Chris Pratt hits him in the face and they fuck up the glove.
Yeah.
Shooting the glove. First of all, that's bad writing. Like, a film out of character. Just wait 5 seconds and you can shoot him in the face.
He had just decided he was going to kill the woman he loves. He can't hold his cool for 3 seconds now?
Right.
Like,
right.
I thought that was, I agree. It's that was such bad writing.
It's bad writing, especially because how that should have gone. And I try not to do this, but I'm going to nitpick it. What he should have done is waited and been like, it's just taunted him. Be like, you didn't love her. I loved her, right? You're just a terrible father and you just destroyed her for nothing. And once we get that glove off your hand, I'm going to kill you, blah, blah, blah. And then he should have come to at the thought that he doesn't love Gamora. And he'd be like, I did love her. And then he breaks out of the spell. Just to establish that bond more, like, that should have been how it went down, not a fuck-up. Although, I thought that fight was awesome. It felt like the closest I've seen to a live-action Naruto battle, with lots of weird powers, lots of combinations of those powers, and lots of weird ways to handicap people, like when he tied Strange's hands, now he can't cast spells, like, he couldn't weave signs in Naruto. Like, I thought that battle was the superior battle because it felt really well-scripted. It was cool to watch.
Yeah.
And it had an interesting objective, right? We got to take the glove off this guy. We don't have to kill him. We don't have to throw him out of an airlock. We don't have to do any of that. We just got to get this glove off. So it felt like Naruto 2, and it's sometimes the path to victory isn't always murder. Until Naruto mm-hmm. shows up, then it is murder.
Yeah.
But there's lots of battles like that where we're sort of fighting over an object or something, and I thought all of that staging was great. And the closest thing we got to what you said, like breaking ground cinematically in some way, although I do think it ultimately plays it safe, there are little things that it did that were, I thought, pushing the envelope, but they were admittedly small envelopes.
Yeah. It's just, and my biggest criticism is probably everybody's criticism. It's just hard to know the stakes of the last 15 minutes of the movie when everyone who vanished has a movie lined up.
Oh, I mean, come on. Suspend your disbelief. You don't have to remember that.
No. Like, yeah, that's a part of this movie-going experience. The things Marvel teases, the timeline and all that shit, is a part of the movie-going experience with the Marvel movie, because you're waiting for the end of that movie for the commercial for the next movie. And that's absolutely a part of the movie-going experience with these particular movies. They're TV shows.
That's true. Well, that's true. I don't know to what extent the average moviegoer is following 2019 release dates the way people like you and me are, though.
I think more people are aware.
Especially because I saw so many genuine tears in that theater that some of them don't know how this works. Right? Like, they're all going to be fine.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
They're all going to be fine.
They're all going to be fine.
They're all going to be fine.
And also, hell of a movie to market to kids.
Oh, I love it. I love it. I want to see. I like that it's like, you know, it's like Empire Strikes Back. You know they're gonna win. You know the guys are all gonna be fine. You know Han Solo's gonna be fine. Yeah. But for a moment, the narrative asks you to believe. What if they're not? And that's a fun place to imagine.
Oh, you gave little black kids Black Panther, and now you just turned him in the dust. Next movie,
Spider-Man 2. Oh. Spider-Man 2. Fucking T'Challa went out real quick. I was like, whoa, he's dead. Oh, shit.
Oh, and then when T'Challa went out, that was the biggest gasp in the movie theater.
Yeah. Yeah, that's what I got a lot of times. Like, no way. No way. Yeah. I was like, no, he's dead. But that's awesome, though, because in Avengers 4, we're going to get Shuri Panther for a little while.
Yeah, maybe.
I guarantee we're going to get Shuri Panther.
I think they're just going to live in a different universe in the Soul Stone.
Maybe.
I think it's going to be two universes. I think it's going to be like, that's just like, I think they're either alive in the Soul Stone, or there's a new, completely different Marvel universe within the Soul Stone.
Man, that's a little Kirby, too Kirby-ish.
Yeah.
Two Kirby's in 290s for the average. I think they're going to be fine. I think what's going to happen is they're going to get the gauntlet. They're going to restore things to the way they were.
Yeah.
And somebody will be sacrificed to save the rest somehow, because maybe the glove is too much to handle and it kills you if you do this, and that'll be Tony Stark.
My biggest question is if Gamora stays dead.
Yeah, well, there's some genuine questions. Like, there's some stuff that I can't anticipate, especially like this little nugget. Did you see who the first casting was for Avengers 4, the sequel to this?
No.
Cassie Lang, Ant-Man's daughter, grown up.
Huh.
So we're either going to get a time jump, or some kind of hyperbolic time chamber from DBZ by going into the quantum realm of Ant-Man, because time moves faster there. and they can train and grow up and like age 20 years in 5 months or something, you know? Yeah. And then they're going to have a new group of Avengers going to avenge their parents. So here's what I'm hoping for. Here's what my dream scenario is that we're going to get analogy characters or legacy characters to existing characters. So that got disappeared. So we'll get to replace Ant-Man, who I'm guessing Ant-Man and the Wasp, which comes out next month, is going to end with one of those two biting it. Probably
yeah.
Paul Rudd, because that's the one people love, right? Kill the one everybody likes. And Cassie Lang going to avenge him, right? So hopefully we will get Miles Morales replacing Peter to have another Spider-Man, and Shuri replacing Black Panther to have the Shuri Panther. And that's what I'm hoping for.
That sounds too ambitious for Disney.
At this point, come on, Disney, roll the dice. Prove me wrong.
Well, but Disney also doesn't have that kind of control over Spider-Man. Sony still has a big say.
Yeah, and that Venom movie looks like trash.
Oh my God.
I am so over wet, leathery creatures from space. I'm so over them.
You know what? I just hope Tom Hardy gives a performance in that movie that is either so crazy bad that it's hilarious, or it's just another great Tom Hardy movie and he saves it.
I don't know which one of those I want more.
I kind
of
want the bad one. I want a crazy Bane. I want crazy Bane voice.
I want I don't give a fuck Hardy to trying something, and I hope it fails spectacularly in a way that, you know, we can watch gleefully.
Man, Venom's got a lot of fans. I was very surprised at that trailer reaction because I thought the CGI on Venom looked real bad. And there were people who loved it. They thought he looked fantastic. I just think Venom's a dumb character.
I'm ready to put Venom stans in the same category as Kobe stans. Like, all right, man, have your fun, but I'm not coming over for this.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. Venom, I couldn't be less interested in Venom.
Yeah, I don't care.
I am super pumped about Deadpool 2, though.
I'm very excited about it.
I can't wait for the X-Men universe to trump Marvel again, as they always do.
Yes.
Speaking of standing, here we go. X-Men movie.
Yeah.
Pumped. I can't wait. They got me legit excited about a Cable movie. I hate Cable. He represents everything I hate about the X-Men, but I can't wait to see how he's going to appear. And I think Deadpool 3 is going to just be an X-Force movie, which I'm excited about too.
Yeah.
I'm hoping they find a way to work in, I don't know how they could do it, X-23?
Yeah, there's no way.
There's no way, but maybe there's a way. I don't
know. Well, Reynolds is really trying to get Jackman to be in it.
Did you see Jackman's birthday video?
No.
He had an Instagram post from his hotel room, where he was just like, hey guys, it's my birthday and I'm just here to say thank you to all my fans. And in the background, you hear somebody singing happy birthday to him, and he pans over and it's Ryan Reynolds in full costume.
Oh shit.
Like lying in his bed with the sheets pulled up.
Yeah.
Like he would have been like hooking up with Jackman. So Jackman's has a real good sense of humor about it. I would love for him to come out of retirement for one Deadpool joke.
Really retirement if he just makes another movie 2 years later.
Hey man, I didn't want him to retire. Come back.
Yeah. Go out on Logan. It's a great way to go out.
He could go out. Go out on Logan. I agree. Go out on Logan. But yeah. I don't see why one scene in Deadpool can't be his.
Oh, account. No. Like, yeah, scene. That doesn't count.
Yeah, that's all I want is a scene.
Yeah.
I don't want him to, like to strap the claws back on. Like, you're done. You're done. You ended on a high note. You ended the champion. You won the Super Bowl. Your movie is still the GOAT. But I do want to see one last just joke. One good joke.
Yeah,
maybe playing himself. That would be great.
That would make more sense in the Deadpool universe.
Right, because then he's not Wolverine, yep. Right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just want him to come on and say bub a lot. Not enough bubs in his performance.
I think he says bub in one of the movies. I don't know. Days of Future Past, I'm pretty sure he says bub.
Yeah, he might drop a bub.
Yeah, which, you know, just re-solidifies that as the second best movie of all time. All right, with that note, we gotta go, Joe. We're out of time.
All right, man.
All right, bud. Take it easy.